These are from the days when Swamiji was talking, not only all the time, but he was the only person talking at Ananda for years. He did all of the teaching. So there's just an incredible wealth of wisdom on these. You can get them in CD form or MP3s. You know, most of us just get MP3s, so you get an email once a month and download it onto your computer. And they're remarkable. So we're now having the woman who runs the program called Treasures. She keeps track of the classes that we're teaching and calls the teacher a little head and says, here's all the Treasures talks that might really serve you and your students. And it's just so wonderful to have somebody doing that. So that's how this came about, this series of five talks that Swamiji gave. And, you know, we're focused here, of course, we're talking about the chakras, but Swamiji, in the middle of talking about any one chakra, talks for hours about, you know, everything else that's spiritually relevant, everything. It's really remarkable listening to these talks. So anyway, Treasures Along the Path at ananda.org, and they're wonderful and inexpensive and invaluable, but this happens to be five talks on the chakras. So don't be confused when you listen to this talk. Swamiji opens it up by saying these classes are about something else. I forget what he says. And I don't know why he said that, if the class was to be about something else and he decided to make it about the chakras or how that worked. But very quickly he says, I really decided to be creative and make this fun. I'm teaching for five full days, so we'll talk about a chakra a day. And that's what he does, and it's great. So, okay, here we are, week three, chakra number two. But each week I want to go back and I want to remind us of just some of these essentials. There are a few people, interestingly, they're not here tonight, but they'll be back, I know that, who have emailed me and said to me, I love this class, and I have no idea what you're talking about. Remember last week, I said to everybody, just coming in out of the blue and taking a chakras class, it's like starting at the PhD level. I mean, it's really an interesting challenge for you, certainly, and of course for us, because one cannot speak about the chakras without making a lot of suppositions. That is, that I could just speak about karma and reincarnation and just assume that everybody in this room believes in karma and reincarnation, even if they happen to know what that means. But never mind, it's like, what is karma? What does that really mean? Or so many of the other things that we're talking about. And I'm going to try to do a little mini review at the beginning of every class, and then maybe focus on a different area. So next week, I'll talk a little bit about karma and reincarnation before we talk about the third chakra. Each time, just trying to give a little bit, just enough that it all makes sense on some level to all of us, even though any one of those topics are other eight-week classes that we give. But it's okay. Here we are, and we'll make it all make sense. And 2 years from now, we'll come back, and we'll all be doing the chakras again. It'll just make more sense, or a different kind of sense, and it'll all be perfect. So we all remember, and I've said this in each class, but I'll say it again, that the whole purpose of life from a spiritual perspective, the whole reason to be here, certainly the reason to be here tonight, but the whole reason we come in and live again is trying to wend our way back from this ego-centered, materialistic, physical sense of reality, that what we see is what we get, that what we can see around us is all that's real, to move to a place of believing and then of actually experiencing that we, in fact, do not really live in a physical world. We live in an energy world. And we don't know that because it's not what we're taught. We don't know that because from the minute we come in, we are taught that what you see is what you get. We just had the most beautiful experience, Rita and I. We were in here, the break. I actually came over thinking I was going to review some notes, but followed along that line, man plans and God laughs. So I did not get to review my notes. In walks this little 11-year-old with her father, out of the blue just now. And she just, the whole time she was with us, she sat down and she said, I've been wanting to come in here. I have felt like I've had to come in here and pray every time I walk by. So she and her father are out for a walk, and she did happen to have a homework assignment of go to three places that you've never been. But she said to her father, I want to go in there. And she sat down and immediately just started asking Rita, who is that man? What is happening in here? What are you all doing in here? I mean, it was so beautiful. And she said to me, as soon as I'm 12, I'm going to be a nun. This is what she just said. You know, and you look at her, I couldn't tell if she was a little mentally, intellectually challenged or not. I'm not sure. I think she was, right? But she was sweet and conversant. Probably being mentally challenged is the best thing that ever happened to her. You know, because that little girl was just drawn in her feeling the energy. She didn't have to work like we do to get rid of our minds. There's a beautiful story that several of you have heard, but worth retelling. Anybody who's heard me give a Sunday sermon a couple times has heard it. There's a man up at Ananda Village whose name is Devarshi. He is the head of Kriya Yoga, this very high form of meditation that we teach at Ananda worldwide. So he's a very deep soul, expansive soul, great yogi. And he was saying at a talk last summer that he travels a lot because he's initiating people into Kriya, literally all over the world, all the time. And he said he'd just gotten to a point where he was really feeling a little weary of being on these planes, particularly because to get to Sacramento, which is how you get to the Ananda Village, you have to fly through Las Vegas. So he'd be sitting in Las Vegas, often for hours, listening to the slot machines and everything else. And he was just got on this plane, and he said, Divine Mother, help me stay in touch with you throughout this whole trip. He was coming back from the East Coast. And he said, no sooner did he sit in his seat than right behind him a woman gets on with what he said he knew instantly was a brand new baby, just had that brand new baby cry. And the baby started screaming and screamed throughout the whole flight. And he said, so when the baby started crying, and I realized the baby probably wasn't going to stop crying, I sat remembering that I had asked Divine Mother to help me stay close to her during this trip. And he said, all of a sudden, I had such a strong desire to go and talk to this baby. He said, but I knew its parents wouldn't like what I wanted to say. And he said, what I wanted to say to the baby is, never stop screaming. I don't blame you. You've been taken away from what you know and love. Don't stop screaming till you get back there. He said to this baby in his mind, they're going to try and distract you. They're going to hang toys in front of you and noisemakers. They're going to try and make you think it's just fine here. Never quit crying. And it's such a beautiful story. I mean, in a way, even, God, I just love that that came to that man. I'm certain I would have gotten on the plane and said, oh, thanks. This is what you give me when I pray to you. But really, he just took it right in. He knew he had prayed. He knew his prayer was being answered. And he plugged into that quality. That baby, this 11-year-old, who just know that they're living in terms of energy. She was drawn here, and she was taken here. And she had nothing that she had to get out of her way. And unfortunately, most of us do. So that's what we're trying to do. And what we're here to try and help everybody see is that the way to do that is by keeping our energy literally in our spine, learning how to do that. Lahari and B. Raj are going to teach you a technique. For those of you who don't know it, for those of you who do, we'll practice a little bit. One of the ways for going to the spine, just like what Rita did just before. For those of us who find it hard to sit and meditate at times, or I always tell people those days when you simply cannot meditate. And we all have those days. We just can't calm the mind, or we want to just get it over with, or we're too busy and distracted, you know, doing something really meaningful like planning dinner for that night or making shopping lists or whatever it is that we do. We'll go over affirmations before the course is over, but I always say, use that opportunity then to start, excuse me, writing affirmations or listening to some of this inspired music. And now, for those of us who are here, we can add, just dance. Just do exactly what Rita was saying, all about this chakra, where you go in, find your core and let that core move you. Again, what we've been saying for 2 weeks, the energy precedes the form. We don't think of it like that. But that's really, in essence, what Rita said so beautifully tonight. She didn't create the form and then memorize it and move that way. She was moved one day. And every time she dances, she didn't choreograph the second piece of music. She lets the music come in. And really, what she didn't say, but what is happening, is that that energy then begins to flow in that astral spine, and it creates the movement. I was recently listening to a talk that I think it was Asha who was giving the talk, but I think that's where I heard this story. She was talking about if you've ever watched Jewish people pray, I mean, particularly rabbis or Jewish men, when they have their talls, their shawls around, and their Orthodox men, and they pray like this. They move. It's called davening. And she said, and it's absolutely right, how did that get started? How that got started is that there was a man one day who felt the energy moving through his chakras. He was really steeped in prayer. He was in touch with the divine. The kundalini was rising, and it was moving him like this. And then everybody else started watching and thinks, oh, that's the way we're supposed to pray. So they start moving like this. Their form was first. I mean, good enough, fair enough. But what happened initially, and I don't know where that story came from or if she just perceived it, because it's, I'm sure, the truth when you hear it, that it's energy preceding form. Then last week, we talked a little bit about the first chakra, the root chakra. And Connie showed us a lot of slides, and I spoke. That chakra, that when it is cleared, when that lotus is open, when, as Amy said last week, there's no duality, when the energy's just flowing such that there's a oneness there, then we feel strong. We feel secure. We get clear about what we want, and we know that nothing will move us from our path. You know, Swami Kriyananda has written, I think, 450 pieces of music. I think that's about right. And each one of the songs that he's written, every one of them, you could listen to the words forever. And each one of them tells the story of our spiritual plight, if you will, our spiritual direction. So why am I saying that right now? Because a song just came to mind called Go On Alone. Walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? Let come who will, but if they all turn home, your goal still awaits you. Go on alone. It's such a beautiful, when you hear the song, you get caught up in the music. And sometimes it takes 10, 20, 100 times to hear it till you realize, oh my God, listen to those words. Every song. That's getting clear in our first chakra. That's saying, I know what I want. I know what feels right. I know what brings me peace. I'm going there. Nobody's going to be able to sway me. Nobody's going to have me do anything else. And nobody's ever going to convince me that that sense of security comes anywhere but from inside. I remember, and from that stability, when I am rooted in what I know to be the truth. We can't fake this. There's no faking it. This is why in the Bible it says God is not mocked. Because it's not what we'd like to be. It's not what we'd like to think we are. It's where we really are. That's why we keep saying stop, you know, continuously stop, get quiet, go inside, feel where you are, and then take your next step and then your next step. And remember, it's all directional. We can't make a mistake. As long as we're moving in the direction of realizing our true self, as long as we're moving in the direction of seeking truth, we can't do anything wrong. It's perfect. It's exactly perfect. Doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. This is not a competitive sport. That's why the comment that Rita made, that story that she told, David Eby, who handles Ananda Music Worldwide, he's an extraordinary being also. But when he said at one of his workshops, okay, everybody, raise your hand, or like when I teach Med 1, I said, everybody, close your eyes. Everybody, close your eyes. Okay, who's actually really meditating? Raise your hand. Because you know what? Who's going to tell the truth if everybody's looking? That's what was so beautiful about the dance. Rita said, we're not here looking at each other. Nothing's happening out there. The whole spiritual path, never mind certainly this path at Ananda, is about not looking out, but looking in. There was a time a couple of years ago where I met a physician who came to me as a patient, and he was telling me this story. He said to me, you know, I forget what country they were from, but one of the Eastern European countries, and his parents were there as we were building up to World War II. And he said, there were my parents. They had this huge, beautiful company, which my father started from scratch. And he said, we had 1,000 employees, looked like we had everything in the world, and within 3 days, we were in concentration camps. Nothing was there. Or that amazing story that Swamiji has told that I think I mentioned last week about the man who was so literally shell-shocked by World War I, said that he was going to do everything he could do to be safe. So he found the farthest away island that he could, the island of Guam, and he bought a nice piece of property there, and he moved there right before World War II broke out. You know, there's just no, it's not out there. It's not that what's out there can't be nice and can't tempt us, but we have to watch every step, because it's each little step. You try and just get off the path a little bit. Oh, I'll just tell a little lie here, or I'll just download this music that I'm really not supposed to be downloading from the computer, because it's actually like stealing, but heck, what's one song? And we just do all those little things that we do, that we don't think a lot of. And then those little things that allow our habits to be lazy and to be out there turn into bigger and bigger things. And then it gets a lot harder to come back inside. So here we are at the first chakra that says, I know where I am. I'm making a commitment. I know what is right. Right, the Sanskrit word dharmic. That which will, if you do it and it's right for the whole world. It could not cause harm anywhere. It is in the direction of living superconsciously. It's a huge word. It's one word in Sanskrit, but it's so huge. And that's what that first chakra is about. It's about setting our direction. It's about getting really clear about where we are and how we're going to move forward. And only then, once we are set in that first chakra, once we're loyal to the energy behind those qualities of steadfastness, of security, the energy behind them, not any security anywhere. No, that's what those why those stories are so telling. But the loyalty to Dharma, to that which is right for us. And what we're not saying, or what I will say in a sentence, but will take years to sometimes experience, is that when you're there, you know it. Nothing bothers you. You don't have any questions. You don't have any doubts. Literally, all of a sudden, you know you're making a decision, and it just really feels right. It's not the ego telling you it wants it. Tough to get there, to be very clear about intuition. But here we are. Now we're just working our way up right into the second chakra because we're firm, we're planted. Now we can move into that chakra that is the very beginning of letting go of solid form. Because you remember how I told you how we came from formlessness all the way down through the chakras, ether, air, fire, water, stone, earth, solid. And our way home is to really just make a U-turn, basically, and just find our way back home. So now we have to work our way back up, literally, this is literally the truth, through these elements, these stages, these feelings, these desires. We just have to make sure that they're all flowing smoothly. So here we are at the second chakra, which begins to say, I have form, water, that's the element that's associated with it, but that form can begin to change a little. I can be water in a glass, but if you dump that glass out on the floor, it's still water. Now it's in the rug, that's all. Or water even more than that. It can be ice, it can be steam, but we can always bring it back to water. So it's got form, and it flows, which earth and rock does not. But it maintains its form, but with a little fluidity, a little flexibility. It can be going this way, and if the road turns, it can very easily go that way. And it still knows it's water, and it still feels perfectly fine about what it's doing and that it's on a journey. So it is, as we'll see as we go, week by week, and the week when we hit the fourth chakra is where we really have this huge transition. But what we're doing is exactly what I was just saying. We're finding our way at the junction between these chakras to just keep giving ourselves more and more room for self, with a capital S, discovery. Again, to know our true nature, to start beginning to experience intuition, so that as we listen to music and we let the music enter us and move us, we intuitively know where to go. We didn't have to memorize it. We're not rigid. We didn't say, this is the only way I'll move. I will always only hold my hand here when I hear such and such a word. No, it's about really taking energy in and feeling it, literally feeling it, and letting it move us. Rita was talking about very beautifully about creativity. Swami's definition of creativity is not necessarily making something that nobody else in the world has ever made. It's about making it from your origin. It starts in you, because we're all like snowflakes. There's no two alike. So every one of us, we can hear the same music, but we'll move differently. We could be given the same paints. We would paint a different picture. We'll create different businesses. We'll give a lecture on the same topic differently if we're following our intuition, if we're letting ourselves be moved. I know that those of us who give sermons here at the church, everybody's always amazed. We stand up, and I don't know how long we talk, 20 or 30 minutes, I think. But whatever it is, nobody has notes. Nobody really knows what they're going to say when they come out. Usually, I think all of us have created an outline, mostly the day before. We've been meditating, and we've been reading some of this brilliant stuff and around the topic that the readings are about. But nobody writes a talk. Nobody. I could no more give a talk with any... Well, you see me anyway. I come in with these notes every week. This is like my security blanket. And people have asked me about it. But, I mean, I'll go home tonight and I'll say, darn, I had all these notes. I didn't say any of what was in my notes. But it's because if I'm letting energy come in, then I'm looking at each of you, and intuitively, something's coming out. This is why very often people will say, I can't believe it. I wasn't even going to come to church today or to class. Somebody told me just last week, you said exactly what I needed to hear that day. And it's surprising to them, but it's not surprising to me. It's not surprising once we know that we are letting energy flow and listening to it, but not necessarily with our ears, but rather from an energetic point of view, not from this worldly point of view. So I just go over some points about the second chakra, and I think Lahari might have some slides about it. A lot of what I've said already, being ready to change in a moment's notice. What does that mean? Most of you were here tonight. We walked in. Our screen was up there, just plain. And Rita came in. She's going to teach this beautiful dance. She said, does the screen have to be up there? I said, well, yeah, it really does, because it's a bit of a thing to get the screen up and down. And I was just like, in my mind, just dance. It's going to be fine. But Amy was here. And Amy heard Rita, and she just walks up, and she said, Rita, would you like it to be some other way? And Rita said, well, yeah, I think so. And then they created this, and it was actually, there were more flowers here, you know, this exquisite altar, just like that. Every quality of the second chakra, right? That responding immediately to somebody's need, to being able to change. What Amy didn't tell Rita is we had come in and all the chairs were lined up, and Amy comes in and she helps set up before every class. And she said to me, what should I do with the chairs? I said, push them all back. Rita's going to dance. So Amy came in and she pushed all these chairs back. And then Rita came in and said, well, what are the people going to sit on while I talk? And without a beat's pause, Amy said, would you like the chairs pulled up? And Rita said, yeah. She didn't tell her, I just pushed all those chairs back. No, totally joyfully. She goes and she pulls all the chairs. It was like an enactment up here of the second chakra. It was absolute. Yes, there. Bravo. You know, but it really was actually with both of them, and then they created this extraordinary beauty. I mean, when it came to us, Connie and I were thinking about what we wanted this first hour to be. We were thinking about the second chakra, and it just came to us we would ask Rita to dance, but I don't even think I knew then just how perfect it was going to be. Did you have a question, Lila? Okay, I'm sorry. By the way, parenthetically, I'm so sorry Connie's not here to see how many of you wore orange tonight. She would be so happy. Really, everybody remembers, which is so wonderful. This is one of the main points. See, we know that we're headed from a place of ego to spirit. That's what we keep saying, ego-centered, spirit-centered. This chakra is the beginning. We'll see much more of it, of course, until we're up here at the sixth, and then we just sort of do a nod to the seventh chakra in the end because none of us can talk much about samadhi, so there you have it. We show you more pictures than we do words. But it's where we are really beginning to look more towards spirit. So we're now coming out of the root chakra where we're rising up and looking more towards spirit for solutions, for a sense of renewal, for a sense of direction at all. Just that little bit of movement. Now remember, none of this is conscious, and it's not like the chakras really do not work in a linear fashion. It's not, okay, now I'm in one, now I'm in two. The fact is, as we do our spiritual homework, is really what it is, which is about practice and about meditation, we start drawing on qualities from all of the chakras. So we're solid, we're clear, we're flexible, we're much more calm. There's a client who I've been seeing for quite some time, and I've mentioned him a couple times in the class now. He comes in every week, and he sees me, and he talks, and at the end of the talk, he goes, well, yeah, but how do I get more spiritual? That's what he keeps asking me. We've been working together for over a year, and he was just away for a couple weeks, and today he came in, and he said to me, and he keeps thinking I'm failing him, that I'm not helping him be more spiritual. And I don't even really know what he's thinking he means by that, but I just keep saying to him, just come back next week, Mike. Just keep coming back. And, you know, of course, I'm watching him transform before my eyes, but just today he came in and he said, boy, I can't believe this. He's just telling me, he said, I went home to see my parents. He took his son. He said, this first time I've done it sober, because he's an alcoholic in recovery. He's been sober for about a year now, but he hadn't been home. And so he was almost worried, like this is going to be the first time he's with his parents when he can't drink, which is how he feels that he's tolerated his parents. He said to me, I cannot figure out for the life of me what came over me. I was so calm the whole time I was there. He said, all these things that bothered me, somehow I was watching it, and they just weren't bothering me. And he said, you know my brother, who I've been complaining about him for a year? I said, I know him well. He said, you know, he's not that bad. I mean, it's just really interesting. And, I mean, of course, we talked about it a little, but he's just changing. He's just transforming without really being able to work on it in any very specific way. So I'm going to stop in 2 minutes, but I must mention one thing. The second chakra is where all of our sexuality really rests. So remember I said a couple weeks ago, I don't think I said it last week, maybe I said it again, there's no chakra that's a bad chakra. It's not that anything's wrong with any of the inherent qualities in the chakra. So we can't say sex is wrong. That's not what the issue is. But we find that as we meditate and as we start allowing energy to move, that we probably don't feel as much of a drive to have as much sex as we might have before. Maybe the way we decide to have sex changes. Maybe the things that bring us pleasure or that we find uplifting even in that way change. That we don't do what happens to people when the energy in these lower chakras is out. That sense that if I feel this good with what I have, if I have more, it'll be even better, which is really what drives a lot of people in the world, but certainly sexually, that the more you can have of it, the better it is. And in fact, we all know that. I mean, that's all of the bragging rights that kids have when they're in high school, and I mean, some of the tragedies that we're hearing about on the news right now, or, you know, how many, how much, how often, how all those questions that get asked. So it's not that the energy is bad. It's not that the desire is even bad. It is, once again, what we do with it. How do we use that energy? And what do we believe within us over and over and over again? We have to say it. What's bringing us our sense of joy, our sense of peace, our sense of even enjoyment? Where is that all coming from? So we move kind of from an animalistic relationship to sex, which is, after all, where many of us start out. And as we do these practices, we move to a more, again, the words are repetitive in a way, but refined, really, refined sense of it. And we move more and more towards a notion of what making love means, literally creating love. So that's how the change first starts. Then you find that the more you meditate, the more you pray, the more you're in places like this, literally it starts affecting your sexual desire just because of the different way that energy flows. Again, not because you've tried to beat it down with a stick. We all see, again, many examples in the world when people just try and suppress anything that is naturally them. It simply doesn't work. That's not the way it works. We have to free the energy, but we have to free it by drawing it in and bringing it up, not by solving the problem out there. Okay, whether I'm done or not, I have to stop right now because it's 8:15, so I'm already over my time. But whatever I didn't talk about today, each week I'm going to go back and bring us up to date so we'll be able to talk a little more next week about this.